Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Rural Americans now cite the opioid addiction epidemic on par with jobs and the economy as the most pressing problems facing their communities. That's according to an NPR poll released this past week. A new Nova special brings viewers face-to-face with that reality.
West Virginia was the perfect storm. The whole state's dominated by one of the hardest and most dangerous jobs in the world. Most of the old-timers that work in the mines work with pain. And then pain pills started flooding the community, and people that you used to know weren't the same people that they used to be. I mean, it ruined everything.
That's Jason Edwards speaking in Nova's new special called Addiction. That film explores the biology and chemistry of addiction, as well as promising new discoveries and trends in treatment. Sarah Holt is writer, producer, and director of the new Nova special, Addiction. Dr. Laura Keough is medical director of the Substance Use Disorder Bridge Clinic and an attending physician on the inpatient addiction consult team at Massachusetts General Hospital. She's also assistant professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Sarah, in deciding to do this special film, these stories and this issue are very much on the minds of Americans across the country, across, you know, all sorts of different spectrums. Why make a documentary about this issue now?
Because I felt like I'd looked at so many documentaries on the subject, and almost everyone in them was dying of an overdose. They really focused on the tragedy. They were very powerful. They were making people aware of the crisis. But I hadn't seen a documentary in quite a while that really tried to explain the science of addiction. How does the brain change when it's chronically exposed to drugs? Why do scientists say it's a brain disorder and not a moral failing? What can science tell us about what's the most effective treatment? And I hope the film could help educate the public about addiction and really help them have compassion for people struggling with it and offer solutions.
So what were some of the things that you found in your reporting that were new, that kind of advanced this story, as you said, in perhaps a more optimistic or more hopeful direction?
Perhaps one of the most important things I realized is that when it comes to opioid addiction, there are incredibly effective medications now that can help patients deal with withdrawal, with cravings, and yet the stigma against them is huge. I would talk to a Stanford graduate student who had been on medicated-assisted treatment for 4 years, had finished his PhD, was on the job market, but he'd be too afraid to give me an interview because even though he was successfully in recovery, he felt like the people would hold it against him that he was being treated for addiction.
Did you, in your reporting, gain any insight into where that stigma and where the controversy over medically-assisted treatment comes from?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think one of the big reasons for stigma and addiction is that it's a baffling illness. It's a baffling force. Patients end up engaging in very destructive behavior. It's very hard for the people around them to understand. So it kind of contributes to this idea that addiction is a moral failing, which it isn't. And then I think for years, you know, one of the only treatments available was the 12-step approach of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they really shun the use of any drugs. And the fact now that we have medications that are highly effective, oftentimes they'll say, well, you're just trading one drug for another. And in fact, that's not the definition of addiction. Addiction is compulsively consuming a drug despite negative consequences. And when people take drugs to help them, you know, treat their addiction, they're actually able to get up and go to work. They're able to re-engage with their families, their communities, hold down jobs, go back to school. They're no longer, technically labeled as having the disease of addiction. They're not engaging in destructive behavior. And yet, very few people can go to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings and say, I'm on medicated-assisted treatment.
So there's a stigma from both ends. Laura, as medical director of MGH's Bridge Clinic, how are you treating patients who come in with an addiction problem and wanting help?
So at the Bridge Clinic, our mission is really immediate access, very low barrier care, and welcoming people at any stage of their illness. So kind of coming as they are and starting you know, where the patient feels that they can start, really meeting them where they are and then helping to move them along. And, you know, when we talk about addiction treatment, this is thought to be a really innovative approach. But I'm an internist and a primary care physician. And when we look at the treatment that we offer for every other chronic relapsing illness that we treat in medicine, this is completely analogous to that. So we're just looking at substance use disorders through the lens of other chronic illness management. And the dirty little secret is that it works. And it's critically important, as Sarah said, to start people immediately on life-saving medications, but also to getting back to meeting people where they are. If people say, I'm not ready to do medication right now, or I'm not ready to, you know, see you regularly, but I'm kind of dipping my toe into this, I'm thinking about it. This illness is really underscored by ambivalence as well as stigma. And so working with people where they think they can start and sticking with them, understanding that it's not a quick exit off the highway, but it's often a circuitous route. And so sticking with people, working to reduce the negative consequences of their ongoing drug use, and, you know, first and foremost, going back to the basics of human compassion and connection, and understanding that this is an illness of deep isolation and shame because of stigma, deep-rooted stigma. And we do a lot of working with people to try to undo that and reclaim the trust that the medical community has really lost with a lot of people with addiction because of our highly structured models that really don't meet the natural history of this illness.
You know, we've been talking about this controversy and even the stigma attached to medically assisted treatment for addiction. Can you just walk us through the evidence? I mean, you know, as you said, meeting people where they are and offering mm-hmm. medication if that's what they want, the dirty little secret is it works. Right. What's the evidence in support of medically assisted treatment?
Yes. So there's decades, actually, of irrefutable evidence, not only that that addiction is a disorder of brain neurocircuitry, but the evidence for medication treatment is strong and irrefutable in the sense that we know that both methadone and buprenorphine, called opioid agonist treatments, lower the overdose risk by 50% to 80% in people who are offered medication. And we know that it helps people to not only decrease overdose, but also regain normal function and normalization of brain neurochemistry and neurohormonal therapy that helps people to get back to feeling normal and functioning normal. Patients may have had experience with medication that actually they may have been started on it, were on too low of a dose, or were never really explained how it worked, and so really struggled with ongoing addiction and drug use, and so felt like this really doesn't work and I'm done with this and this isn't going to work. So a lot of the piece up front, rather than just offering it to patients, is we really have to do a good job of educating patients, just as we would about any other medication we're offering them. Part of that education is to do a really deep dive to let them know this is not trading one addiction for another, but this is actual treatment that's going to help keep them alive and help them regain function.
Sarah, in your reporting on this issue of addiction, how unique is this model of treatment of addiction?
Well, I think that it's becoming more and more acceptable. I was really encouraged as I started to travel around the country. I was up in New Hampshire, and they're getting millions of dollars now from the federal government, and it's all going towards medicated-assisted treatment. But when I was there 2 years ago, the predominant model was abstinence-based treatment, and I was watching young men go into treatment programs and come out and relapse, and many of them overdose. So I think that the attitudes are changing, and that's one of the things that surprised me in working on this film, was that it wasn't depressing. I actually found it quite hopeful and was quite impressed with a lot of the work people were doing on the front lines, especially in Vancouver, Canada, but they have amazing harm reduction programs.
You do, though, dive into just how horrible both the addiction can be for individuals and how hard it can be to quit. And I want to play just a little bit of Jason Edwards, who we heard earlier, describing his withdrawal symptoms when he tried to quit.
Withdrawals will make your bones ache. I couldn't leave the house because I couldn't take a step. without soiling myself from the withdrawals. You could talk to me. I'd throw something at you, bite your head off.
Laura, can you explain a little bit of what's going on inside the brain and the body of someone who is trying to stop using opioids cold turkey like that, and how medically assisted treatment can aid in that without, as you say, just replacing one addiction for another?
Yes. So when somebody steps into the realm of addiction and they're physiologically dependent on opioids, they've actually gone from no longer achieving a high from the opioid, but actually just using to function in the morning, just using to be out of the severe symptoms that he describes of withdrawal. What happens is the receptors in the brain that opioids bind to are looking for opioid to replace that and to help to stabilize the brain. And there's a syndrome of withdrawal symptoms that people suffer, and that's severe anxiety, severe ongoing craving, or this insatiable feeling of the need to treat themselves with opioid. And then the gastrointestinal symptoms that he describes, diarrhea, severe nausea, vomiting, severe muscle aches. Many people describe it as the worst flu you can ever have. And there's this kind of teaching that, oh, well, opioid withdrawal makes you feel like you're dying, but people don't die from it. And we actually are seeing people who are dying of severe dehydration with cardiac arrest due to it. So it's not as benign as people think. And the benefit of treating that, are not only that you're alleviating suffering. I mean, there's this notion that people who have this addiction should kind of suffer through it and eke through it because they, quote, did this to themselves, which couldn't be farther from the truth. When somebody is at that stage, as Sarah said, kind of this ongoing compulsive use despite negative consequences is reflective of untreated addiction and this complete disarray of numerous receptors in the brain. And so the medications that we have, both methadone and buprenorphine, are so incredibly effective almost immediately. And that's one of the reasons why we use them so aggressively, to alleviate the suffering and to prevent someone from them needing to treat themselves, essentially by using illicit opioids to calm those horrible withdrawals that continue to drive the use.
Sarah, as writer, producer, director of this new Nova special on addiction, you said that one of the things that surprised you was how not depressing this was. Obviously, this is still an enormous public health crisis, but it's also a burgeoning area of research. What were some of the most important advancements in our understanding of addiction that you uncovered, and how might they help inform future prevention and treatment efforts?
One of the things that amazed me the most was the work of Yasmin Hurd, where she was looking at how heroin can actually impact the way our DNA functions, turning genes that should be on off and genes that were off on. And I think that one of the things is that helped me understand why addiction might be a chronic disease, why it might last long after someone stopped using drugs. But I think it was also important that she said, you know, she really said this just helps you understand why people with addiction have to try even harder. You know, the brain can heal. And we've seen evidence that, you know, when people are in recovery, some of the brain changes that have occurred are reversed. And so the brain is incredibly plastic. And yes, it changes in response to chronic drug use, but it can also change back.
Laura, given our current understanding of addiction and the options available for treatment, do you think it's time to end the abstinence-only approach? And are your colleagues in the medical field ready to do that?
So I think, you know, this was asked last night as well. And abstinence-based approaches, I think, in isolation for this illness have been shown repeatedly to not be an effective intervention. However, in combination, if there, so 12-step AA, NA is an incredible life source and support, and can be actually, you know, meeting by meeting can be a different set of mission, of idea, of chemistry. And that is critically important to break the isolation, to have peer support as people are navigating this very complex illness. So I think the ideal would be that we continue. It's a free resource. It's throughout the country. There are meetings all the time. But to work with our 12-step programs that have been, you know, really the core of helping people get through this, but to help them to open up to, there's no one pathway to this for anybody, and to be open for people who do need medication. And the truth is, the majority for this illness, because people are really presenting with severe stages of illness, will need this medication that's life-saving. And hopefully we can work with, it's not just peer support, but it's also, there are medical providers too who still struggle with the notion of using medication for this illness. So I think the onus is on us as a medical community to continue to educate people that really this is analogous to other chronic relapsing illnesses that we see, where we don't bat an eye at using medication to help people, keep people alive and get their lives back.
Dr. Laura Keough is medical director of the Substance Use Disorder Bridge Clinic at Massachusetts General Hospital. Sarah Holt is the writer, producer, and director of Nova's new addiction special. Thank you both for your work and for sharing it with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's our show. Join us here next week for more Living Lab Radio, or connect with @LivingLabRadio anytime on Facebook or Twitter. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Funding for Living Lab Radio comes from the Candida Fund, investing in transformative leaders and ideas. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.